Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This just will not stop with this Audible thing. It's unbelievable. What do you guys want me to say? I think that we've always had adjustments within our plays. Like, it's just we called it something different. And the fact that I didn't call it an Audible, everybody was running wild with it. So, it's comical to me.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Never had a bigger win. A testament to hard work and self-belief. Grigor Dimitrov, welcome back where you belong. His first win over Federer.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Kurt Suzuki, see you later! The Nets have won it! 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth!
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080, The Fan. Brandon Sprague and Andy Johnson in with you on this happy hump day.
Hump day!
What's happening? Not a whole lot, man. We've got Mario Cristobal coming up here in 13 minutes or so.
Yeah, we do. Right around the corner, head coach of the Ducks.
Should we save this morning for later, or should we do it now? There's a couple different avenues I could go with this segment.
I think we need to at least update the listeners on what took place this morning, okay. And then if we feel like there's more meat on the bone for later in the show, we can chew on it at that point.
Okay. There was no meat on the bone this morning.
Well, this just in. Jason Swigard can't squat 300 pounds.
No, he cannot. No.
Jason Swigard can't squat 190 pounds.
No.
Which leads me to believe he can't squat 185.
Well, the over-under number was 185.
Yeah, we wanted people to have action. We didn't want to have a no action where we pushed. So that's lame.
You can't go 185. So we threw a couple.
I tried to
go
pole vaulter where I hit like the opening height and then I like skipped a bunch.
Sure,
wasn't a wise move. Didn't work out for Dan O'Brien qualifying for the Olympics back in the day. Did not work out for me.
I would say your first wrong move was even suggesting the idea that you could do that.
Yeah, I know. Look, we shoot our mouths off on this show all the time.
That we do.
Swigard, that was quite a thing to say. I could squat 300 pounds. Yeah. What? Yeah. By the way.
We live and learn.
Real quick. So he
But didn't, I showed up for the ridicule. Yeah,
you showed up.
He did.
You were your team player there. I would say when he tried 300, because he did 190, couldn't do it, I said, let's put 300 just to see what it looks like and give him a run here. He got the bar maybe an inch and a half off on the right side. The left side didn't move, and he instantly dropped it.
Yeah.
He's not going to say anything publicly, but I will. Probably about 15 minutes after Swigard quit and then left, Dirt squatted 300 pounds.
I did.
Oh, you did. Well, I know you were working.
Yeah.
Because he put like 190 or 200 on it right there.
Yeah, I have a max out squat. And like, we don't really max out when I work out. It's just, you know, kind of functional training and staying limber. And, you know, getting older, I don't need to max out. I'm not trying to prove anything to anybody.
You're not winning a competition tomorrow.
No, I'm not. Right. But, yeah, I was curious because Swigard couldn't do it. And I was like, well, shoot, I haven't done this in a long time. Let's see what we can get.
So
I slowly worked my way up, and I ended up getting it. That's about my max. Like, that took everything I had.
You had veins showing in your neck and forehead.
I was down and up and just, you know, one of those. And thankfully it made it. And I was like, okay, that's it. I'm good. I'm done. I'm out of here.
Yeah. So Swigard shows up. I saw him. I was exercising. I saw him walk in and then he went and signed his waiver form. And then I saw the one practice with just the bar.
Just the bar. Yeah. We had him just.
Well, they had to set the safety catch on the bottom, how far down. So it was just for measurement.
And that was great. But when I watched you squat the bar, I saw a little eensy bit. Everybody that works out, you know what I'm talking about. You just saw that little bit of, oh, And when I went, well, I was live on Instagram. I go, "Hey, Swag, how'd you do with the bar?" He's like, "I could tell it was there." I was like, "Oh, he's doomed.
You only have 260 pounds more to go." No.
Like, there are human beings, mainly football players here, but there are human beings that grab the bar and do a practice squat, and it's no different than if they had no weight.
Right.
When you're saying, "Oh, I felt the 45 pounds," yeah, you're in for big trouble.
Yeah, this was, you could tell the form was a little off too, with the bar set, like, it, you know, the everything.
Yeah, clearly I did not know what I was doing.
Everything wasn't quite aligned with the knees and the hips.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how far to get my feet spaced. We didn't want them too wide, but
it's tough. And then you got to make sure, in order to it be counted as a full squat, you want to make sure you go down far enough and you get back up. There's a lot that goes into it.
I took the 190 all the way down, and I was feeling for where I could. I still had leverage to go.
You did, yeah.
And then I had to go like 3 more inches, and I lost all the leverage, then I tapped out.
It was gone.
Sukanik, after you quit, I wrapped up my workout, so I walk away, and I grab my phone, I look at it. Sukanik texts me, "Hey, let me know how it goes." And I said, "Oh, we already have the update here."
Yeah, here's the video.
He didn't squat 190 pounds. And when he did the practice, I just told him the whole thing that had went down. And he just said, that's amazing. Yeah. I'm working out today, and I'm just going to be thinking about him and the show as I work out.
He was doing a special series of squats in my honor, so he'll have that to start the show.
If you want to watch the video, you can. We put it, it's on Instagram at 1080 the fan, so go follow our account. It was like a live video. We did it this morning at Crunch, and thanks to everybody at Crunch for hooking it up. And probably, I don't know where it ranked in terms of the disappointment of the day, but as Swigard was signing his waiver form to make sure he wasn't going to sue him if anything went wrong today during his lift session.
I was actually glad they did that.
I know that
he would sue.
Sure,
but.
Sure. I love all the people that work there, and I've gotten to know all the employees at Crunch. And so the gal at the front desk, as he was filling out his waiver, you know what she said to me? She said, "Is this your dad?" And I just, you know, it was one of those, like, he's not going to live 300. Then you ask that question. It's like, day's not going good for him. You didn't need it. You know, could have gone older brother, you know, made him feel a little bit better. No.
Who's more hurt by that question, you or Swag?
I mean, I'm not hurt by it at all.
So Swag's probably like, "Hey, what the hell, man?"
I just looked at him and just started laughing like, no.
Yeah,
I was like, he's not my father.
I was like, "Dirt, this is your account. I'm not."
So I thought, hey, there's a good start to the day right there.
All right. Well, we have a lot to get to today. It's a busy, busy show. Cristobal coming up at 12:15. Let's find out what's on tap.
Dirt and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right. There's a lot of sporting events that you say, "Oh, I got to go do that."
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on tap? Brought to you in the fan by Pelican Brewing Company. Born at the beach online at pelicanbrewing.com. We will get to Mario Cristobal coming up here at 12:15. He had a change in his schedule, so he went from Dusty and Cam to now he is going to be on with us today. I don't know what that's going to be like the rest of the year. Maybe the next one's with Isaac and Souk. We don't know yet. It's a fluid situation. He's a head coach of a major college program. Schedules are going to be weird. But he'll join us at 12:15 today. We'll give our thoughts on what we hear from him. We'll also bring it back in the final hour for those of you who may have to miss it for work or whatever. And for those who aren't even joining us yet that may miss it in general. So we'll bring it back in the final hour. Mike Leach said some really great things at his press conference yesterday. We'll bring that one to the light. And then I also want to give a little credit. Parliament over there in Britain.
Yeah, they got a lot going on right now.
Super underrated entertainment factor.
Oh, it absolutely is. They yell at each other. The accents are awesome.
Do you feel like Congress should just go that route?
I think it'd be a lot more entertaining.
I feel like they want to do it.
Just air out all that dirty laundry.
I mean, this is the era where clearly the left and the right hate each other more than any other time.
I'd rather have them do it in person, face-to-face, than all the Twitter nonsense.
Yeah,
and
it's
press
a lot of tweets.
Just go in there and stare them down.
Yeah, a lot of those guys in their suits, They throw these shots to the other side of the aisle, and I'm like, you guys are all just cowards in suits acting like you're high and mighty. You're going to see that guy in an hour and shake his hand and say, "Oh, I was just playing with you on Twitter."
Just kidding.
But we'll have some fun with audio. Jared Goff got paid. Ezekiel Elliott got paid. Melvin Gordon might be traded very soon to a contender. We'll tell you who that is. We got Crunch Time coming up at 1:45. We got Statter Story as well. And I may ask the question, should goaltending exist in the NBA?
Oh, okay.
Because there was one game in particular in this FIBA tournament where it was won by a goaltend.
Does anybody know that the FIBA tournament's actually going on?
No, and okay. We don't need to talk about the actual tournament. Although America did survive Turkey in overtime yesterday.
Nobody cares.
Right. I didn't watch it all. Not one second. So that's what's on tap for today's show, and it's brought to you in the fan by Pelican Brewing Company, Born at the Beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. Mario Cristobal, head coach of the Oregon Ducks, will join us next on The Fan. All right, 12:13, welcome back in on The Fan. Mario Cristobal is going to join us here in a minute or two. We already had a listener say, I bet you guys take it easy on Mario today.
Oh, yeah.
I responded and said, what does that even mean? Like, do people want you to yell at the coach because you're frustrated as a fan? I never know.
Like, I don't know the angle there. Yeah. What do you accomplish by that? I mean, that's not saying he had a great game or Oregon had a great game on Saturday.
No, he's probably, I mean, the first question I asked, he's probably going to tell you.
Sure.
Disappointing we didn't finish that thing.
Yeah, nobody's more upset than the people inside that locker room and on that staff. Attacking somebody and doing the gotcha stuff, like that doesn't accomplish anything.
Yeah, but some people love that stuff, man. Yeah. They love when it's them and they go viral, and then from the other side of it, they love to hear it because they're not the ones having to ask the question.
Yeah, we're not the show that's seeking to go viral, so that's not really in our category.
I do have a lot of questions, though, about them getting to that point.
Yeah.
Getting to that point of a few games now in his tenure and what leads to it, et cetera. And we'll talk to him coming up in a minute. We also heard from Marcus Arroyo. I heard some of the clips on Dusty and Cam this morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he talked to the media yesterday.
And I don't, you know, even though he talked about opening it up, et cetera.
Sure.
We'll get to it. But Mario Cristobal is joining us now here on 1080 The Fan, the home of the Oregon Ducks. Here they got their game this weekend, 4:30 this weekend against Nevada at Autzen Stadium, and he joins us now. Coach, thanks for taking some time and joining us up here in Portland. I'll just start with the game itself. What did you see in person, maybe in the second half, and what did you see on tape that maybe led you to feel a certain way about the game changing momentum?
Well, I felt that we played hard throughout the entire game. We certainly maintained our physicality throughout the thing. They made some plays. And they did a pretty good job of man coverage when we were trying to take some shots down the field. But overall, I just think it was a very hard-fought match, obviously coming down the last couple plays of the game. But we had our opportunities, and we didn't capitalize on them, and we got to take it as a team and move forward.
Yeah, there's always so much excitement going into the first game of the year, I think, for everybody, fans included, just trying to figure out what their team's going to look like and what kind of season they're going to have. And you know, some teams can ease into the year with a winnable game. You guys were thrown right to the fire, the only ranked matchup in week one. What did you feel like you learned about your team one week in?
Well, I think it was important for us to find out exactly after being 18 months in a certain offseason program where our physicality stands, right? Because at some point in time, you're going to have to be a very physical football team, an explosive football team, to be able to compete at the highest level. And we felt that a lot of the stuff that we worked on was on display on last Saturday. And then a couple things that we really feel strongly about being able to execute and being able to coach, we fell short on. So there was a lot of learning. There was a lot of stuff that was accomplished as mm-hmm. well. So good, some positive, and some other things to work on.
Mm-hmm. Mario Cristobal is joining us now, the head coach of the Oregon Ducks. They get ready for Nevada 4:30 this weekend at Autzen. I saw your offensive coordinator was talking to the media yesterday, and he talked about opening the playbook and taking chances down the field more often. Felt conservative was the word I kept hearing from people. How involved is Justin Herbert in play calling, audibles, the communication factor between him and Marcus Arroyo on a play-by-play basis?
Well, no, we have a play caller and we call the plays. And certainly we try to take some shots down the field, connect on a couple early in the game. And then the second half, felt like we had a couple of things there. They did a real nice job covering it, you know, and we certainly have our plays run up for certain situations and certain coverages. They're there, you take them. If they're not, you got to check it down or move on to something else. So credit to them and credit to our guys for working hard at it.
Does Justin ever step up and ask for certain plays or anything like that, or does he just run with the program?
No, Justin, whenever he sees something that he really likes or something he feels strongly about, it is he's all about it. He's all about doing whatever to help the team win. And you know what? When he sees certain things on the field, there's some flexibility there for him to change certain things and put us in an advantage play, whether it be the run game, the pass mm-hmm. game, or a protection. So he's and he's excellent at it. He does a great job.
Yeah. Well, one thing we all know about the offense, you guys were a little shorthanded at the wide receiver position, and we all found out before the game that Juwan Johnson wasn't going to play. We knew about Schuler and Micah Pittman before. So everybody knew you were going to be shorthanded, and then the Juwan Johnson news, people found out before the game. I'm just kind of curious, one, how you think that affected the offense, and then two, how differently you guys maybe attack Auburn if you felt like you had all those guys out there, especially in the second half.
Well, I think anytime you lose four starters on the side of the ball, it's hard. You know, Cam McCormick was a guy that we certainly missed as well, but we never flinched. We never went in there, you know, making that as a, or using that as an excuse. We trained the other guys to go ahead and try to do the same things. And guys had, they did some really good things, you know, against the team that, I mean, heck, has been known as one of the better defenses, not only in the SEC, but also in the country. So there was a lot of stuff that our guys that stepped up that did really, really well, and some other things, hey, you know, they'll get better at, and we'll make sure we execute on it. You know,
and one thing I think that stood out too was that touchdown catch by Spencer Webb, which that was kind of a coming out party for him. Anybody who's stood around him realizes how big and physical and strong he is. And then he goes up and makes that play in the end zone. So kind of on that note, looking forward against Nevada and then the weeks to come, we know Schuler's going to be out for a while. Pittman's going to be out for a while. I know we're just kind of waiting to hear on Juwan Johnson and when he's ready to go. But do you envision the rotation changing at all at wide receiver, more Spencer Webb, more tight ends? Like, do you have any changes there out on the outside?
Yeah, we're using more bodies. You know, you saw Brian Addison, he played a whole bunch for us while Juwan. And even when Juwan comes back and Brian's still going to be part of the rotation, Spencer Webb jumped in there. You know, David Davis is a guy that has gotten a lot of reps. Him, as well as, heck, Patrick Herbert has gotten reps out there at wide receiver. We, you know, because of it's a large number of guys that are out for a little bit, we're using all the bodies we possibly can that are capable of helping us win football games.
Yeah, Mario Cristobal is our guest, head coach of the Oregon Ducks. They get ready for Nevada this weekend. I think anytime you get good guys in recruiting and they come to your program, you're obviously hoping they become great. And two names that really stuck out for me just on television, Penei Sewell and Javon Holland, both had big games. They look like complete beasts. Did anybody else pop on tape for you of, oh man, this guy really stepped it up from this offseason program to today or even in person?
Well, I think a guy that doesn't get talked about nearly as much as he should is Jake Hansen. Jake Hansen was, he played about as, I've faced this opponent a few times and went that other place I was at. I haven't seen a center play a game against them like I saw Jake Hansen play. I thought he was really off the charts as a competitor, as a player. I think Troy Dye continues to do what he does, as well as Isaac Slade. I mean, there's a good chunk of guys that played some really, really good football. And the best part about it is no one is satisfied. No one's looking for, hey, we played well, but no, everybody wants to get better. And that's the objective of the entire program, get better every single week, so we could accomplish our goals.
Yeah, I think another exciting part for people going into the start of the season for a week one, especially for you guys, is coming off the best recruiting class in the history of the program and having that kind of influx of talent. Just curious what you saw from the freshman. I know we saw a handful of them play. Mace Funa, Kayvon Thibodeau on the defensive side, but you know, that's tough. You throw an 18-year-old kid into that fire in front of that many people and that big of an audience. It's a bit of a jump from high school football. What did you see from the true freshmen that made their debuts?
Oh, they all competed. I thought they all did a really, really good job. You know, that's the part that they'll test you a little bit. You just signed a great class. You wish you could hit the fast forward button, accelerate it for 3 years and have them in a program. But that's part of it. But really proud of the way they went in there, the way they competed. There's opportunity on our roster. That's another big reason why they're here. And they took full advantage of it. We expect those guys to continue to get better.
Are the symptoms with some of the road woes and the Stanford and Auburn games, I know they're different, but the way that they kind of ended, are the symptoms the same in your opinion?
I don't quite understand in terms of symptoms. I know that our team is all about competing. Our team is all about fighting all the way to the end. And you know what? We've had some really close games go our way and some not go our way, but it doesn't change our approach, our mentality. And certainly in no way, shape, or form is anyone looking for any relief in a form of an excuse. So love the way our guys have approached the week mentally and certainly looking forward to another great practice tomorrow.
Is it a vital part of building a program is you don't want to, but sometimes you just have to take your lumps, you know, getting to a point of where you're aiming for with the program. You just have to take those from time to time in college football, don't you?
When you rebuild a program, you can't skip certain steps, and that's part of it. But to me, the whole thing is, look, you got to build it from the inside out, and you got to be impervious to any noise, to anything, because what you have to do to get a program on track to perform consistently at a high level requires every ounce of everything you have. And we're understanding that, our players, our organization, is understanding that you only get 60 minutes. That's all you get. You know, you're not promised anything else on a weekly basis. So I love the approach. I love the fact that there's an understanding, like, you know what, we can get better. And that's been the focus. So it's been good.
Yeah. I'm curious from your playing days too, Coach. There's something about, you know, when you're trying to close out an elite level opponent and having that killer instinct, if you will, and you guys have won some big games. The Washington one, obviously, sticks out from last year. But is there a learning process in that as well? Because you mentioned, I mean, some of those mistakes in the first half, you felt like maybe you left 14 points on the board, and then the game, we're having a completely different conversation today and then going forward. Did you go through that kind of as a player on those Miami teams of learning how to have that killer instinct? And when you got a team on the ropes, you got to put that nail in the coffin and put them away.
Well, I mean, you love to have the 14 points, but you can't dwell on it, because in games like this, you just got to keep playing. I mean, you're really the clock and the scoreboard, they kind of lie to you. You know, they really don't tell the whole story of the game as the game goes on. You just got to keep playing. So, but I don't know if it's fair to compare it to those teams. I mean, those teams that I got to play on, those were like 6, 7, 8, 10 years in the making without having lost a game, and maybe once every 3 years or so. And so it was, the roster was already stacked. The systems were already in place. The strength and conditioning program had been running for 10 years. So it's a, you know, I mean, it's a kind of, that's a kind of, I would say, program success that you want to build and sustain. Are we going to get there? Absolutely. Are we there quite yet? No, and that's okay. Building and getting there is a great part of the process that we love.
Well, and you strike me, Coach, and I, you've maybe even said this to us before, but you strike me as a guy that you also want to see how your guys respond against adversity, right? You start out 0-1, a game that you probably all feel like, okay, that should have been ours. We didn't get it. Let's work and go back and try to get the next one. What have the practices been like? And should we expect to see Juwan Johnson this weekend?
Yeah, that's, you know, the only way we approach that, which I got to be honest with you guys, we approach this in the same way we prepare our guys for life. There is no buckling. I think, you know, we live in a world where I think it's sometimes popular to buckle and give in, and it's not part of our DNA. We don't do it. It doesn't exist in our program, and our guys have attacked this opportunity of our Sunday practice, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's been awesome. In terms of Juwan, I don't know. I wish I could say he's ready to go. He was just about ready last week, and we had a setback. So I hesitate to say that he is. I think him and Cam are still day-to-day and seeing where we get to by Saturday. And hopefully we'll get good news by then.
Yeah. Your opponent this weekend, Nevada, as well, not a pushover in any way, shape, or form. I mean, they just knocked off a Big Ten opponent in Purdue last week. So you got your hands full again this week trying to get that first win. What have you seen about or seen from Nevada on film that stands out to you?
Well, first, it starts with their, you know, really with both sides of the ball, very impressive. And on defense, it starts with their middle linebacker. You know, we kind of know that name, Sewell. He does a great job. And they're disruptive. They play a very different scheme, you know, at three men, the three down front with the stack linebacker look, the odd stack, the odd tight stack. They do all kinds of different movements and stunts and pressures that create a lot of problems. And it created a lot of problems for Purdue. It showed them the game, and when you flip the other side of it, they've got long, athletic wide receivers. The quarterback does not play like a freshman. The guy is well beyond his years. The offensive line is tough. They get good push and movement, and the running backs run hard. They are a really good football team, and I'll tell you that game they won was no accident. They're a really good team.
That watching that game on TV, Coach, the timeout situation at the end there, the back-to-back timeouts with Herbert going in and then Herbert not going in, what happened there from your vantage point?
Well, the first time I had to use it, because from a personnel standpoint, with some of the injuries that we had, we required different personnel groupings. The Herbert thing, it really has nothing to do with the timeout. Even though we were fuzzy on the rule, we were set to go with Tyler. Mm-hmm. When those guys were in there, did not feel comfortable with the way the guys were settling into their alignments and to run the play. So no hesitation there. Use the timeout, regroup. It's a 4th-and-1 play. Let's get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so much pressure, I think, in this era is put on quarterbacks to perform. And sometimes we forget it takes a village to win a game, but they get a lot of the credit or a lot of the blame for wins or losses. How'd you think Justin Herbert played in a big moment on a big stage?
He played very well. I think, you know how it is. You guys are in the industry. Whenever things go great, so let's look for the guy to hand the trophy to. And when things don't go well, let's see who we, you know, why. And then let's blame it on this rep. There's a lot of different things that go on in the course of a football game. A ton of plays that can swing it one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Justin Herbert played a heck of a game. He really did. And just love how accurate he is with the ball, how decisive he's been with the ball. And at the same time, his leadership skills have really just continued to grow and develop. So really fired up about him, and I can't wait to see him play this weekend, man. The guy's really playing well.
What did you make of Coach Avalos' debut with the program? I know you guys were really excited to get him from Boise, and we talked to him actually going into it, and he seemed pretty jacked up to get to Dallas and make his debut. What did you make of the defense's performances under the new DC?
I thought we were disruptive, played with a lot of energy, made a lot of plays, especially in the first half and the third quarter, and really just pleased with the way that that defense has come along. And against, again, a team that's known for physicality and doing a lot of things and making explosive plays, I thought that it was a really good first showing, and I think our defense is just scratching the surface.
My my co-host, Coach, I'm going to get you out of here on this one. My co-host saw you pregame. He says, I've never been scared from a human being walking towards me like when I saw Cristobal walk out of that tunnel. He was ready to go. Did you, though, have any moment of downtime where you got to enjoy some Texas barbecue?
No, I don't. You know how it is, brother. When you're in the season and even in the offseason, it's go time. You really don't get to sit back and really, I mean, I enjoy it. I love the grind, yeah. So it's not like it's a burden, but no, I'm sorry to disappoint you without having any barbecue, man.
Don't worry. I ate enough for the both of us, Coach. So we're good there. Don't worry
good.
About it.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Mario Cristobal, the head coach of the Oregon Ducks, getting ready for Nevada this weekend. 4:30 kick. You catch it here on The Fan, joining us here. Coach, thanks so much for the time. Maybe we'll talk with you next week.
Okay. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
All right. There we go. Mario Cristobal and his thoughts coming off that Auburn loss. Justin Herbert, play calling situations, the timeout. Interesting. So basically what I got from that too was no autonomy for Justin Herbert. Not that like they won't listen to Justin Herbert, but I kind of got this vibe of we call the play and that's the play. There's no,
yeah,
you know, he rolls with it basically. Whereas, and this has been brought up by many people, you look at a lot of other programs in the country with quarterbacks that people talk about. I almost feel like Trevor Lawrence probably already has like some autonomy, right? To audible out.
It's tough to speak on that because I don't know how it runs at every program. And you do see Justin Herbert from time to time, you know, walking up to the line of scrimmage and changing a call or sliding a protection a certain way. So he does have the ability to change certain things at the line of scrimmage. I don't know how many college quarterbacks get that though, to be honest. I think that's more of a thing when you get to the NFL, and we're going to go through it with Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. How much control does he have over audibles? But yeah, not changing a ton, it sounds like. He gives an input on what he thinks they should be calling or where he thinks the weakness in the defense is. Maybe they need more of that. I think one of the things you want to see most from Justin Herbert moving forward, and it's risky, it's catch 22, but I'd love to see him use his legs more. I think he's a great athlete. I think he can move, whether it's in the RPO or just him, you know what, hey, it's not there, I'm going to tuck it and pick up 7, 8, 9, 10 yards. I think that's an ability that he has that could really make it more difficult to stop Oregon's offense.
All right, we'll have more on this coming up next. Light we'll see. All right, welcome back in. 12:34 on The Fan. Interesting reaction at the Better You Today text line at 55305. A couple different thoughts on that one. He didn't seem to care whatsoever that you ate barbecue.
He was not impressed by my eating abilities. Not impressed.
How different of an approach is it? We asked the DC going in, hey, are you going to get some barbecue? He's like, oh, I got to get some bird in.
Yeah, right. He gives you the answer.
And then you ask the head coach, yeah, and he's like, I got no time for that, brother.
Like, I mean, this is just the way coach interviews go. Sometimes guys give you a little personality. Sometimes they don't. You try and get something out of them. There's not a lot of head coaches in college football, though, that are an open book and talking about their life. It's just kind of the reality you live in. I was curious to hear his answers on the game and why certain things happen. You asked him about the two timeouts at the end of the game. Yeah. I thought there were some telling things in there.
They basically, I mean, if you missed it, we're going to podcast it. We'll also bring it back in the final hour. It kind of was like, yeah, it was a little hazy. So it sounds like nobody on that staff really knew the rule. And then he also didn't like his personnel.
Yeah, so I still maintain, man, I honestly think that Justin Herbert ran onto the field without telling anybody.
Well,
And he's not going to throw his quarterback under the bus. Because if you go back and watch that moment, there was a team huddle going on because they called the initial timeout. And Herbert was kind of standing on the outskirts of it, and he was talking to Shuck.
He had just gotten hit really hard, too.
They called the first timeout because he was down with the injury. He got up, walked off the field, so then it was like, all right, Shuck's going to come in the game.
Because once you go off, you have to sit out a play.
Yes, and then they called the timeout, so it's like, okay. And then he just kind of ran on the field, and then there was immediate confusion with the referees saying, no, he can't. And I think it's a coach trying to cover up for Herbert. I think Herbert didn't know. And that's just my two cents. I might not be right on that, but from my vantage point, that's what I thought happened. And then he didn't want to call a play by running Shuck back out there. and saying, okay, the play clock's running. The formation's already set. You go run out there and hike the ball and hand it off. He said, all right, hold on. We got to reset here. And that's why they called the second timeout.
Well, and somebody texted in that Cristobal is a D. Like, look, guys, I understand it probably sounds a certain way. And I'll tell you, when you ask him questions, like I asked him the symptom question. And as soon as he was like, I don't understand, I was like, oh, no, here we go again. My opinion of him is I think he genuinely cares. Like, and I really mean this. I think he genuinely cares about his players. I think he cares about their well-being. I think he cares about their future. I think he cares about them being student athletes while also obviously trying to go win at a high level.
That's why they love him and he's such a good recruiter.
I don't think he cares whatsoever about media obligations.
No.
And so I can't, it's not always the most enjoyable time, but I can't sit here and say he's this because he doesn't want to do one particular thing.
Right.
I actually think he's probably a good-hearted guy, but it's not something he enjoys like a Mike Leach does.
No, yeah, he's not going to pontificate on different things like Area 51.
Like, I can text Mike Leach now and say, Coach, could we get you on next week to preview the Houston game?
Yeah, sure, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And he would probably say, yeah, sure, let's do it. I could text Cristobal, and I feel like he would probably never respond.
No. And look, I don't think an Oregon fan should care about that. I don't care about that. He can be as unimpressed with my eating habits as he wants to.
Sure.
All Oregon fans care about is winning, his ability to coach, yeah, and win games. And I think that to me is still the interesting part of coming out of Saturday's game is, and I said this a lot going in, it was going to be a barometer game of finding out where you're at in a number of different areas. Can you hang with a team that's a top 20 caliber team from the SEC? You're trying to build a program up to the point that you can win at the line of scrimmage and be elite on the West Coast at the line of scrimmage so you can hang on the national stage. How do you feel you can stack up after playing Auburn? That, to me, goes back to the interesting part about the Auburn game is just finding out where you were. And I think Oregon fan has to be, while disappointed about the game management that has been an issue, the second half play calling, I think there's also on the flip side of that a positive spin of, you showed from a physicality standpoint that you can hang in a game like that for a chunk of it, not all four quarters, because clearly the second half was different than the first, but for a chunk of that game. And it was unique going into a matchup where the only talking point wasn't how bad is Oregon going to get beat in the trenches, right? Like, that was always when you went against LSU, Ohio State, Auburn the first time, right? Any of those games, man, like, how can Oregon hang against this defensive line or this offensive line? And that issue's kind of out the window now. Like, you can see watching that game a framework of what he's trying to build and the potential there. You can see an influx of new talent, of true freshmen and some dynamite sophomores that were all over the field making plays. Like, you can see the blueprint of where it wants to go. Now it becomes a maintain that, keep up the recruiting, but you got to clean the other nonsense up. You got to clean up the timeouts and the execution. You got to be able to make second half adjustments. Like, the framework for building something special is in place. It's just up to them if they can ultimately get it there.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the most obvious thing about the first half was, oh, man, that's like an SEC offensive line. This isn't stretch out the field with Oregon back in Chip's days where, right, they're a little lighter than most offensive lines and they run it out, yeah, with their blocks. This is a much different, this is an SEC type offensive line that he is trying to build. And you're right, see the framework being done. It's just our two collapses in a 13 or 14 game span. Is that a long-term problem? Are you already right, worried about it? Or are
that's
they one-offs where, you know,
fluky stuff happens.
You have to remember, this guy hadn't coached in, what, 4 or 5 years? He was at Alabama, right?
He was an offensive line coach, I believe, for 4 years at Alabama.
Okay, so yeah, he was there for 4 years. He comes over. He's an assistant at Oregon. So 5 years between being a head coach and then being a head coach again. I'm not even making excuses. Those are both games they should have won, Stanford and Auburn. But I'm not sure if we should be rushing to the opinion of, well, he's never going to be good in this. Like Pete Thamel's article, I enjoyed the read. Who's to say they don't have a Washington game where they're up and they just put them out?
Right.
They don't blow it. The team doesn't come back. And then at that point, for all the people who had such a strong opinion that he's a bad in-game guy, we should red flags already. Yeah. Well, what is your opinion then if he changes that? What if he beats USC, comes back from nothing and beats them last minute? Sure. What if he holds a lead against UW and they hold on and they win that game?
Well, their next big challenge is going to be in 2-3 weeks, Stanford, when they get Stanford on the road.
Right.
Now, and we don't know how healthy they're going to be.
And Stanford may be down this year and maybe, yeah, they just run them out of the building. But my point is, we can run with these conclusions if you want. The reason I haven't done that is because it has only been 13 or 14 games in his tenure so far.
I think he's 9-6 right now or something like that.
And we'll see what this season is going to be. I don't want to just react to one game. Although the one game was important, it sucked to lose. It's another SEC Pac-12 narrative. You can't have a grand conclusion when you still have 11 more. If this happens two or three more times.
Without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. I'll be the first one in line to tell you, I think you should be worried about this. This is a serious problem. This isn't like some situation that barely ever happens. It's consistent now. This is something we have seen throughout his coaching tenure. But right now, I'm not sure we're to that point yet.
Yeah, and that's where I think you just got to give it time. I don't know how many of those it takes for you to count this as like a serious trend in terms of not being able to hold a lead or make adjustments, because you have a couple examples of it so far. And it's difficult to answer the question how much of that is a coaching failure and how much of that is just having weird, fluky things happen. Like the chances of hiking the ball in two separate games inside your own 10-yard line, only to have it be fumbled and ran back the other way almost for a touchdown once and then for a touchdown the other time. Like, in your 20 years of watching football, how many times have you seen that happen?
Not very.
Right? And it happens to the same team twice, where last year it's hiked over his head, bounces directly to a Stanford defensive lineman. He rumbles the other way for a touchdown. Momentum is changing that game.
Yeah, I didn't think about the Stanford play when you said that.
Whole momentum turner. Yeah, they were good. Right. They were on the brink, I think, of going up like 31-14. I don't know, whatever the score was, they were dominating that football game, on the brink of putting the final nail in the coffin. Instead, it's ran the other way. Touchdown. Here we go. We got a game. And then this year it was, you know, Herbert's air because they fumbled the exchange. But again, there's an Auburn defensive lineman that's right there. Nobody around him. It bounces up to him. He doesn't just fall on it where Auburn has to go 90 yards. He picks it up and scoops it. That's the tough part about analyzing these kind of games and blown situations, is, are these just fluky? Is this a systemic problem? And that's where I think you watch it the rest of the season and you see where it goes and how they handle future situations like this and future adversity.
Well, and that's why I was curious about that. Like, from his perspective, does he view the road woes, like the first half against Wazoo last year, obviously the Arizona game, the Stanford game, the Auburn game, does he view those? They're very different, but Duck fan or even just college football fan could view those very similarly and say, this is a coaching situation. I was just curious if he viewed them the same way. Like, is there some one thing that always seems to pop up when he rewatches the film, right?
right?
And maybe it's coaching, and then he doesn't want to come out and say, yeah, you know, we weren't really good.
I screwed that one up.
And then if the players aren't playing well and they don't execute,
right,
he's not going to be the guy to throw him under the bus.
He's not Willie Taggart coming out the next day and throwing his players under the bus.
I think stuff like that, man, we can throw it at him. If they lose at Stanford, and Stanford is what we saw against Northwestern and Costello's questionable but plays, then yeah, I think it's going to be totally fair. If we have him, if the morning show or the drive time show, whoever has them after Stanford, if they lose that game, I think it's 100% genuine to go, what's with the road woes?
Yeah, and this is what I think they showed. The positive out of the Auburn game is they showed they have a good football team. And I firmly believe that. And I don't know how you watch that game without thinking to yourself, you know, that's a good football team. Now, they shot themselves in the foot. They didn't execute in the second half. The coaching mistakes were glaring. So there's a lot of stuff to clean up from it. And now you just find out where the rest of the season is going to go. But they're going to have a chance in every single one of these games. And that's when you can analyze what kind of year two was it. Because I don't like judging. He's 9-6. He's coached 15 games. The bowl game I throw out. That was an anomaly where he takes over. He was interim. The coach had just left 2 weeks earlier. Like, I throw that Boise State game out.
Oh, the Boise. I forgot about the
count
Boise
that. Like,
game.
That's like, whatever. If you want to count that, you can. But if you take that out, I think he's 9-5 now in a year plus. Like, I'm not saying he's the next Nick Saban, but Nick Saban was 7-6 his first year at Alabama. Right, like, he was 6-6 and he won a bowl game, 7. Like, these things, like, it doesn't just pop and you just come in like Lincoln Riley's the anomaly where you just go 13-0 in year one.
Yeah, he's got to get your recruiting in there, and they got to start playing. Like, right, he wants to expedite the situation. And we'll see. And I think another thing that people are doing is, because we've been doing it in the media, and then I think we also do this as fans, is we read about teams that we face. Right. I've read about Oklahoma State a little more than I ever would because Oregon State played them.
Sure.
I think what people do is they come to the conclusion and they say, well, Auburn's going to be fourth or fifth in the SEC. And then they draw a parallel line and they say, that means the Ducks who lost to that team are that in the Pac-12. And I didn't walk away with that. As much as I might want that as a Beaver fan from time to time, I didn't walk away with that thought. I walked away with, yeah, Oregon could win the North. Even though they lost this game, even though they kind of gacked it up,
yeah.
I think Oregon can win this game or win the conference, win the North, what have you. It's just going to be about health, and we'll find out what happens with some of those other guys. But they're not the same. They're completely different, and maybe Auburn even surprises folks. Who knows? But we'll see. So there's our Mario Cristobal recap. If you missed the interview, we'll podcast it, and we're going to bring back probably 3, 4, maybe even 5 cuts from that interview in the final hour and replay them for you. Coming up next, Mike Leach wants to go to Burning Man, and Parliament is amazing. That's next on The Fan. All right, we're big fans of Mike Leach on this show. We like talking with the coach from time to time. And he's never one that is short of opinions and thoughts on different topics. Somebody, we have 3 different cuts, it looks like, here. Let's start with the Area 51. Somebody brought up Area 51 in his press conference, and he gave his general feelings about Area 51.
What I think goes on is I think that they test things there. I think, you know, stuff that the military and the government's developing, I would imagine they test it there. You know, work with the prototypes and things like that there. If they have, you know, found spacemen or any Roswell stuff, that'd probably be a pretty good place. That'd probably be where they would store it if such, you know, if there is such things. But I think it's I think it's pretty much a test site where they test and develop everything from, you know, aircraft to bombs to some type type of technology, because there's got to be a place to do that. I suspect that if they didn't cryptically call it Area 51 and it didn't have, you know, just the eager, cold, no one allowed quality that it has, it probably wouldn't be quite as exciting as it is. And of course, you throw aliens on top of that, and you know, the curiosity goes wild. So, but that's what I think it is. I think it's predominantly a test site.
Well, and then he was asked from that. He was asked what he thought of this big raid that's going on Facebook, where everybody's trying to go down there in September. I think in like a week or something, and just storm the place. He was asked about that.
Well, they ought to have Burning Man or something instead, just an extra Burning Man or a concert or something, because, you know, sitting there trying to go through barbed wire fence while, you know, there's a bunch of aircraft over the top of you or whatever. I mean, I don't think that'd be quite as much fun as some of the alternatives that you could have. But, I mean, what are we to assume? You know, 10,000 people are going to go start digging through warehouses. I do think there is an end of days quality if we allow that type of thing to happen anyway. So,
and then he was asked, would you go to Burning Man? You brought up Burning Man. Would you go to it?
Because initially I thought that I wouldn't, but I know people that have gone and they all say it's fantastic. And then the other thing, it's difficult for them to describe it, but they all say it's great. And they kind of, you know, they're kind of folks that come from kind of different places, like incredibly wild to, you know, like an attorney, a guy I went to law school with. and they all say it's just a cool spectacle to see. Yeah, but it's during the season.
He sounds so disappointed that it's during the season, so he can't go. He's a one of a kind, man. Look, everybody has their different philosophy with coaching and the things they want to talk about. You always appreciate someone who just, like, he doesn't care. He'll share his opinion on everything, and that's why Mike Leach is beloved. I hope he stays at Washington State for a long time. If he ever does end up leaving the Cougs for another job, it's going to be a sad day in the Pac-12 because I'm going to miss this stuff.
Yeah, I hope he stays there for a long time. When the Tennessee stuff popped up, I did get sad. I was like, well, I want to see him at a bigger program. I think he could actually ruffle some feathers in the SEC.
Oh, he'd be great in the SEC.
But then he didn't go, and I thought, well, I'm actually happy about this because we're still going to get to watch him coach.
Right, you can still interview him throughout the year.
And we'll get to hear the audio clips from him.
Yeah, I wonder, too, like, just him moving forward to Washington State, like, he clearly, it took a couple of years, and that was a total rebuild up in Pullman. Took him a couple of years, but now you can clearly see the infrastructure is in place for him, where it's gonna roll out 7, 8, 9, 10 wins every year, right? Like, I don't ever foresee Washington State with the system in place having a quote-unquote down year of not going to a bowl game. He's new quarterback, boom, doesn't matter. I know they played New Mexico State. That's an inferior opponent. We'll have to wait and see how they do against tougher defenses this year. But the kid comes out and throws 5 touchdowns and 6 incompletions for like 400-plus yards in his debut, and that's a career backup. Like, he's been sitting around Pullman for 3-4 years waiting for his opportunity, and there it is. He's in the system. He knows it well, and he's going to shred defenses, or the majority of them that he plays this year. Like, there's got to be a good quality as a head coach of knowing, especially when you run a system like that. Like, it takes a couple of years. You got to recruit certain kind of players to fit the system that you want to run. And then once you get the infrastructure in place and you're in a university where there's not a ton of pressure, right? Like, if Mike Leach goes 8-4 this year, let's say, slightly down from the 10-2 last year, there's no hot seat conversation. There's no, like, panic from Cougar fans.
Dude, he's got a lifetime deal there.
It would take, like, 2 or 3 years of not making a bowl game in order to get there, and I just don't see that happening. And that is always the fascinating part to me about college coaches and where they decide to go or stay. And it's why I've always appreciated Gary Patterson at TCU, because he can have ebbs and flows, but he's a legend at TCU. There's a damn statue outside the stadium of him, and he's still the head coach there.
He's also still alive.
He's still alive. If he goes 5-7, like, nobody's rushing to fire him. But if Gary Patterson were to leave, let's say Nick Saban retires and Alabama hires Gary Patterson, and he has back-to-back years where he's 9-3, dude, the hot seat talk starts up immediately. And so there's got to be a nice feeling for Mike Leach of knowing, one, his system's in place. They're cruising forward now. Doesn't mean they're going to win the North or win the conference. They got to get through Washington and prove they can do it against tougher defenses. The system is play, and there's no pressure on him. Like, he's in a really good spot right now in Pullman.
You know, this is a good question. Somebody's saying, would he work in the NFL? I mean, we just saw the wave of everybody hiring the offensive-minded guy who spreads it out. I'm sorry. All these guys, Zach Taylor,
yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury, they can't hold Leach's jockstrap in understanding these kinds of offenses.
Most of them come from his coaching tree.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'd lean no, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if that personality works in the NFL the way it does in college.
I think every player is different, too. Like, certain players relate differently to different coaches. Some guys need that rah-rah guy. You need, like, a John Gruden. Want to be a nightmare, not a dream or a nightmare, you know? And then other guys, they hear that kind of stuff from a head coach, and they probably laugh at it. Like, oh, shut up.
Yeah,
you know, like, stop with that cliche nonsense.
He would kind of be, I'm not talking about in terms of success. I'm just talking about the way he would operate. It would probably be very similar to a McVay, where he has an offensive coordinator, but he's ultimately the one calling the plays. And he's a big players coach, nonchalant, doesn't really care about the defense. He'll hire the defense coordinator and let him do his thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what kind of coach. And then he would be willing to talk about Area 51. Yeah. That's, you know.
Yeah, I think players look, they did the big expo. Was it an Athletic article that we read off of a while back of, like, the behind the scenes of what it's like to play for Mike Leach?
The quarterback room, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It struck me as hilarious. I would find it entertaining as hell to play for him. He seems like he cares about his players. He's a funny, he lightens the mood to be around. Doesn't mean he's not intense or he doesn't want to win or he doesn't have the same passion as guys like Mario Cristobal. He does bring a lighter edge to it that I think a lot of players could translate to. Like, if you're willing to hire Cliff Kingsbury in the NFL, why is that any different than Mike Leach? Just because he's younger and he's better looking? Because he doesn't want to talk about Area 51, Cliff Kingsbury could work? Like, Mike Leach knows that offense better than Kingsbury. He's had more success in college than Kingsbury. So if you're going to hire him, I don't know why you would be scared of hiring Mike Leach.
Do you think he's tried? Do you think at all he's put his name out and put his agent to talk to some teams?
No, next time we have him on the show, I'd be curious to ask him that.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of guys in the NFL now that are going that route and they're getting jobs because they run his system. And by the way, not as well as he runs it.
No.
So if you're hiring those guys, Mike Leach is still available.
I would be very fascinated and sign up 1,000,000% if he went to the NFL. But I enjoy him in the Pac-12.
He makes me that on. Now, we're going to get the Cougs on Hard Knocks, like some semblance of Hard Knocks this year, which would be great. If he ever goes to the NFL, give me Mike Leach's team on Hard Knocks.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Yeah, I want that for 5 weeks.
All right, we got a loaded second hour as well. We'll kick it off with the payday of Jared Goff, the payday of Ezekiel Elliott. What are your guys' thoughts on how much money both those players got? Are they worth it? We'll talk about that next hour, two straight ahead on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.